So today I want to discuss what happens at the quantum level. So I'll start with the free scalar field. So we know that H1, Christou space, O minus 2, this is the same as harmonic functions. And what I'll discuss is some field theory on Christou space is going to correspond to the free scalar field. With this. So if we want this to work,
It's kind of hard to see on the.
I know.
The thing, the dust.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. Like the chalk is terrible and the eraser is terrible.
Yeah.
So I. So if we want something like this to work, we want to build a theory on Christou space so that the field equations give you this cohomology group. So how do we do this? So remember, this H1 comes from the Dalbo cohomology and a representative is A, which is a 0-1 form in Christou space with values in O minus 2. So in coordinates, A should look like dz bar times f plus dv bar times gi times dz. And in order to define a cohomology class, we need it to be closed. So we would like the equation d bar a equals 0 to be the equation of the field equation, the polar Lagrange equation. So for that to make sense, well, the solution, like the Lagrangian we write down, is S of A is the integral over Christou space of A times d bar A. So I'd like to explain why this makes sense. So A is a 0-1 form. Coefficients at minus 2. So d bar a is a 0-2 form. And a d bar a is a 0-3 form with coefficients in O minus 4. So the reason this makes sense is that O minus 4 is exactly the things we can integrate. So let me say that over here. So the holomorphic volume form, V1, DV2, is a section of O minus 4, because the dz contributes a factor of z to the minus 2 when I go from one patch to the other. And the dvi contribute z to the minus 1. When we change patches. So this expression, A d bar A, is locally some kind of function, dz v1, dz d2 vi, and then dz bar, d2 v bar. So locally, it's this kind of thing, which is exactly what we need to be able to integrate it. Okay. Now we notice that this Lagrangian has gauge symmetry. This is invariant understanding A goes to A plus D bar chi, where chi is a 0-0 form on twister space with values in O minus 2. So now the claim is, which is actually very easy, so solutions to the equations of motion modulo gauge is the same as H1 twister space coefficients at O minus 2. This chalk is really awful. It just... So therefore, it's the same as harmonic functions. So this is almost obvious, might I wrote. If we vary A, the equation of motion is simply that D bar A equals 0. So mod gauge A is equivalent to A plus D bar chi. So the solutions modulo gauge is, by definition, the same as cohomology. So this is all very simple, but with this in hand, we can now try to lift the classical relationship between twister space and field equations to a relationship between quantum field theories. So we're going to start with free theories and move on to interacting theories. And And I'm hoping to be able to explain how when you study interacting theories, you can get really new, some real and useful insight into four-dimensional physics. So hopefully by the end of the course, we'll be able to understand the Park-Taylor formula for scattering amplitudes and how it's a very easy thing from twister space. And also the asymptotic symmetries that people like to study, like the BMS group. And that's also some kind of very simple thing from twister space.
I'm sorry, Kat?
Yeah.
So the gauge, has to satisfy, I think, d bar squared x equals 0, chi equals 0, or are we assuming some sort of like boundary condition?
No, that's automatic, because the square of the d bar operator is zeroed. So, you know, on a complex manifold, if I had coordinates wi, d bar looks like dw bar, sorry, like this, d by dw bar I, dw bar I wedge. And I wedge with something. So d bar squared looks like so I do two derivatives and then two wedges, but these are anti-symmetric and these are symmetric, so that's zero.
Yeah. Moving on to W's question, I think the action is A d bar A, so when A goes to A plus d bar chi, d bar A will not change because we'll get d bar squared.
Exactly, yes.
But A will go to A plus d, it will be a total derivative.
Yeah, there's you to check this is a gauge invariant, you have to use integration by parts. Sorry, was that your question? Maybe I misunderstood.
No, this was my question.
Yeah.
The square.
Okay. So to check that this works, I want to explain a kind of fun little computation. At least I find it fun. That you can compute the two-point function of the free scalar. We know that phi of 0, this two-point function, it's up to a constant. I'm going to ignore the constant. So we're going to reproduce this. So how do we do this? So the operator phi of 0 corresponds to the operator where I integrate A over the CP1 where the VIs are 0. And the operator phi of u hat so in each case, we're integrating over a CP1. And the two-point function, phi 0, phi of x, this is going to correspond to some two-point function of these non-local operators. So here, each operator, it's an integral of my gauge field over a sphere. And I'm going to connect them by the twister space propagator.
You said that we take the contour to be mod c equals 1 because we just need to take the pole, but now it seems that we need to take the contour as the incidence relation.
Yes, thanks for mentioning that. So I think the way I've presented it, it might have been a little confusing. So there's two ways to compute cohomology. This check way, where we think about meromorphic things on the intersection, and this Dalbeau way. They give the same answer. But if I take a Czech cocycle and I want to represent it in the Dalbeau language, you do it by taking some function z, and then you multiply it by a delta function. And this is the Dalbeau representative of that quantity. Now, the contour integral, let's call this A, of f dz is equal to the integral over all of CP1 of A. Because this integral over all of CP1 just picks up this delta function, and therefore the contour. So in the Dalbeau picture, we integrate over all of CP1. So so we want to compute this two-point function. So actually, the computation is like very similar to something you might do in, I don't know, in Yang-Mills theory. You might try to compute the two-point function of a Wilson line or something like that. It's very analogous. And have you guys studied gauge theories and how to quantize them? And you probably recall that it was a giant pain to figure out the propagator. Yeah, but there's a trick that I'm going to use that works really well for these kinds of things where it's a free gauge theory. And it's the following trick. The trick is don't use the propagator. The propagator directly. So instead, look at the field sourced by the defect. And this field, this will be equal to the integral of the propagator over the defect. Like this, one leg on the defect. So the field sourced by the defect is like, if I knew what the propagator was and I integrated over the defect, I would get some field configuration. And that thing would be the thing sourced by the defect. So rather than actually playing this game of gauge fixing and yada yada, you just solve this equation and it's much easier. Okay, so how do we do this? The Lagrangian plus the defect is the integral, I'm going to put a factor of minus a half here, a d bar a, plus the integral over the CP1, which is the locus VI equals 0 of A. So what I want to do is solve the field equations when I've also included this term. So the field equations with the source term are d bar of A is equal to the delta function v1 equals 0, v2 equals 0. So fortunately, we can just write down a solution of this equation. Here is one solution. A is equal to 1 over v1, so 1 over 2 pi I, d bar 1 over v2, delta, sorry, times dz. So why is this a solution? Well, I want to use the following equation. That d bar, say 1 over z, is 2 pi I. So this should be minus 4 pi squared. Is 2 pi I delta function z equals 0. This is an important equation. Have you guys seen this equation before? Yeah?
Just to clarify this, so, okay, we associated these operators from free, from our spacetime with these ones other, these over in Twister space, and we're gonna, for to calculate the correlation function, we would have to put those two inside an expectation value using that action. Yeah,
exactly.
ADA, or del bar A. But somehow we said no, that we don't need to solve that.
Well,
we implicitly will solve it in a different way.
Exactly. I mean, I'm almost saying something very simple, like the formalism of propagators for gauge theories. Is great when you have a non-abelian gauge theory and complicated Feynman diagrams. You don't need it for something really simple.
Okay.
Like it's a much more physical procedure. I solve I look at one operator, I solve the equation in the presence of one operator, and then I evaluate that solution on the other operator. That's what I would do for a free scalar, I would say. I put an operator at 0, and I solve the Laplace equation. That solution is the Green's function, by definition. Then I evaluate the Green's function at the other one. So I'm just reproducing the most elementary way of computing the two-point function.
Okay. But somehow we've written it in the language of some integrating over a defect.
The point is, whatever the propagator is, if you take the propagator, say, d bar of it is a delta function. Oh, there's 6 because it's. So if I, when I integrate it over this defect, d bar of it will be a delta function on that defect.
Okay.
So rather than like, you can go find something that solves this equation, but it's a kind of nasty expression and you probably don't want to, it's easier to find, to solve something that satisfies this equation. Okay, so how do you guys feel about this? Does it look like a solution to you? No? Okay, let's see why this is a solution.
I'm sorry, one small question.
Yeah.
when we're integrating over CP1 in this particular computation, is the CP1 that corresponds to the R4 coordinate x minus 0?
No, it was because it's the CP, it could be either, but I've chosen the CP1 that corresponds to the operator at 0. So I've put in that here. Now, if I integrate my propagator over this one, this is at vi equals 0. Whenever I integrate my propagator over that, d bar of it will be a delta function on this curve, the CP1. And I'm supposed to take the answer I get, take the solution, then integrate it over the other one. That would be the two-point function. So let's just check the equation. I'm going to ignore the factor. Yeah, let me just ignore the constants. So that's the same as 1 over v2, the delta function, sorry, 1 over v1, delta function v2 equals 0, dz. So therefore, d bar of a, well, the d bar will hit this guy over here, will give me the delta function v1 equals 0, delta function v2 equals 0, which is what you want. And as I said, this is all relying on the equation that d bar 1 over vi is the delta function vi equals 0. And if you were unfamiliar with this, I could derive it for you. But are you happy with this? Everybody happy with this equation? Yeah, I mean, it's very close to Cauchy's theorem, so it's not. I mean, the derivation is simply, you know, 1 over d bar, you can write a momentum space as 1 over p bar, and then you Fourier transform. OK. Where were we? So the two-point function, taking A to be this expression, which is sourced by the defect at vi equals 0, the two-point function is then the integral over the other CP1, of A. So let's compute this. So the equations for the other CP1 are V1 is U1 plus U2 bar Z, V2 is U2 minus U1 bar Z. So therefore, we're going to be integrating. So we want the integral over Z of 1 over U1 plus U bar 2 Z. D bar 1 over U2 minus U bar 1 Z dz. So this integral is very easy to do because this d bar will produce a delta function in the z plane. This is going to be 1 minus 1 over u bar 1. Now we have to worry about the coefficient in front of z. That'll come out as an overall factor times the delta function. The delta function when this is 0, which is when z is u2 over u bar 1. Great, and now we just insert this value of z to here, and that's the answer. U1 plus U bar 2 U2 over U bar 1, which is minus 1 over U squared. And it was, well, the wrong sign, and I'm missing a factor of 4 pi because I was lazy and I didn't keep track with them. Maybe 4 pi squared. So we'll do something like that. Okay, I think this calculation is really fun. Any questions? Yeah.
Question about like the conceptual.
That's the hardest part.
So a function in regular scalar field. So the two-point function for scalar field only knows about the two points that we're computing between.
Yes.
But when we do this correspondence to two-star space, we have to integrate over an entire copy of CP1.
Right, but that's reasonable, right? Because a point in ordinary space-time corresponds to a copy of CP1 in twister space.
So. I guess, like, shouldn't it? I don't know. I would have maybe expected a sort of, like, overall factor in front of the propagator, 1 over x squared, that accounts for, this is like a big thing. The actual question that I have is, even for a regular two-point function, how do we think about this, the trick of, instead of computing the two-point function straightforwardly, I source it from a defect? And
Let me explain. So if I have, explain it up here. So if I wanted to look at this two-point function in the scalar field, this is going to be the Green's function evaluated at x. Right, this is the usual definition. So by definition, the Laplacian, because we're a Euclidean signature, of the Green's function of x is the delta function at x equals 0. So g of x is the field sourced by phi of 0. So if you solve if we solve the equations of motion, we get so really, this kind of thing is where the Green's function comes from. We can apply this trick here. Suppose you want to compute, I don't know, the integral this kind of two-point function of the integral of 5x, 5y, and this is along some copy of OR. course, this is the integral over x of Green's function of y minus x dx. But we could also do it by saying we could solve the equations of motion in the presence of the operator integral over or 5x dx, and we get the same answer. So in this case, you know, depending on how good you are with integrals, it's actually quicker to do this. If I look at this expression, I mean, we get the same answer because, you know, Laplacian in y, the integral g y minus x dx, I can bring this inside. That's going to be the integral over x, the delta function, y equals x dx, which is the delta function y is on the line. So that's the equations of motion in the presence of that. But sometimes it's easier. Sometimes this integral is painful, but this differential equation is not so painful. So that's what we're doing here. Okay, any other questions?
Again, related to this integral, when we are calculating the equation of motion, these two integrals are over different spaces. One is on CP1, the other is on twisted space. But we are varying the field A and we get del bar A equals.
Yes. So the way you should think about that is that this is an integral over twister space of A times the delta function. Same thing, but now it's clear that when you vary A, you get this.
And also, what about the variation with respect to del bar A?
Oh, well, the variation of A contributes two terms, but it's just the usual Lagrange equations. You use integration by parts, and you have the parameter with respect to which you're varying only appear without derivatives. Just like you always do with Euler Lagrange equations. Oh, yes. Do you have a question, Sergio?
I guess maybe this is a conceptual question. So I guess the thing that you're computing on twister space is like the holomorphic linking between these two.
Exactly, things, yes.
Right? Is there some way you might have like anticipated that that's the thing that this two-point function is supposed to be without like?
I mean, I think once you realize that local operators on space-time are these kind of holomorphic Wilson lines, mm-hmm. I feel like that. But I don't know like a pure thought way of doing this computation without doing a little bit of work. So the next thing we want to discuss is, okay, so now we know free theories can be lifted, free massless theories can be lifted to field theories in twister space. And you can do all of the usual games about, you know, computing endpoint functions by Wick contraction. And it's all the same, and it's kind of a bit boring. So the really interesting stuff comes when we look at interacting theories. So the first place to study interacting theories is not to look at a scalar field like this, but to look at a gauge field. So if we remember, fields of spin 1, there were positive velocity, it's H1 visitor space. O, negative velocity, this is H1, visitor space, O minus 4, this is O 0, same as O. And in our discussion of the scalar field, we wanted to know that A d bar A was something we could integrate. And to do that, we used the fact that A was an O minus 2, and I had two of them, so that was O minus 4. And O volume forms in twister space also lived in O minus 4. So we're finding something similar here. If I combine the positive and the negative velocity things, it's they combine together to O minus 4, which is something we can integrate. This is, in fact, always true. So we can build a theory on twister space for free gauge theory, for Maxwell theory, by taking two fields. A is a 0, 1 form on twister space coefficients in O, so just a 0, 1 form. And B is a 0, 1 form on twister space with coefficients in O minus 4. So B in coordinates, this looks like A z bar d z bar plus a v bar I d v bar I. And this looks like b z bar plus b v bar I d v bar I times the volume form because of this O minus 4. We can think of that as a volume form, a Lagrangian. Is integral b d bar a. You mentioned the history of this. As far as I know, the first thing along these lines was written down by Witten in his paper on twisters n equals 4 twister strings. This is a version of it without supersymmetry, written down a year or two later. So something a little funny about this Lagrangian is that there is separate gauge symmetries for B and for A. We can A is going to be A equivalent to A plus D bar chi. And B is going to be for chi just a 0, 0 form, the function. And B is equivalent to B plus d bar, say, eta, and eta is twisted by O minus 4. As before, solutions to the equations of motion mod gauge are going to be equal to H1 DO plus H1 PT O minus 4. And these are going to be equal to solutions of Maxwell's equations. But the Lagrangian does a bit better. Still, however, this is still a little boring because it's all free. Yeah?
Sorry, B is a 3-1 form, is it?
Yes, B, yeah. I didn't write that, I didn't introduce that notation. So
sure.
Yeah. Any other questions? But the nice thing about this is that we can make it interacting in a very simple way. So to do this, we must introduce some gauge algebra. And then we take A to be a 0-1 form on twister space valued in G, and B to be a 0-1 form on twister space valued in G tensor O minus 4. And the Lagrangian is the integral of B times the field strength of A. So now, because I have this Lie algebra, I want to think of as A as something like a gauge field. But it's only half of a gauge field. It only has the dz bar components and dv bar. It only has 3 of the 6 components of a gauge field. But it's still enough to make sense of things like this piece of the field strength. This is and the gauge transformations A have to be modified. But we're just modifying them in the usual way we do for a non-abelian gauge field. Actually, I went a bit faster than I thought today, so I didn't prepare this section as well as I could, but are there any questions so far?
I have a question about the I guess the notation and the concept behind it of comma g. So when you tensor it with O minus 4, we're saying tensors that pick up weight of that factor, but then they're also Lie algebra value.
Yeah, so I could say in coordinates, A looks like TA, AZ bar, DZ bar, plus, and B looks like TA, B, AZ bar, DZ bar, plus, times the volume form. Great, so there's this lovely theorem due to Ward, So solutions to the equations of motion on twister space with B equals zero. So those solutions just with A with this field strength equals zero, mod gauge. This is the same thing as solutions to the self-dual associations to the Yang-Mills equation to get this right. Or 4. So what does this mean? These are some, but not all, solutions of the Yang-Mills equation. So these are gauge fields in OR4 with the negative velocity component of the gauge field vanishes. So this implies the Yang-Mills equation. Okay, so this is great because we've taken this nonlinear PDE, which is of real physical relevance, and we've turned it into something which turns out to be a lot simpler on twister space. And historically, this was important because this is how people use this correspondence to then classify these Yang-Mills instantons in the 70s. Okay, it's a little early, but I think I'll maybe stop there for today.
My question is, why does B equals zero correspond to F equals zero mod gauge?
No, I didn't say it very well. If I have a solution, varying B gives me F equals zero, and varying A gives me some equation on B.
Oh, I see.
I'm looking at those solutions for which B happens to be zero. So then this is the only relevant equation.
Okay.